We're going to start with Iran. Yesterday, the National Intelligence Estimate came out and said that Iran had halted its development of nuclear weapons 4 years ago. This is a little bit different than what they had said in the National Intelligence Estimate as recently as 2005. President Bush held a press conference this morning, and I'm going to play you a little montage of some of the things he said in reaction to the NIE at the White House today.
We know that enriching uranium is an important step in a country whose desire was to develop a weapon. If Iran were to develop the knowledge that they could transfer to a clandestine program, it would create a danger for the world. I view this report as a warning signal that they had the program, they halted the program. And the reason why it's a warning signal is that they could restart it. The NIE provides an opportunity for us to rally the international community, continue to rally the community, to pressure the Iranian regime to suspend its program.
President Bush this morning at the White House in his press conference in reaction to the National Intelligence Estimate released yesterday afternoon. Here to help with some analysis of this is our old friend Scott Ritter, the former U.N. Weapons Inspector and U.S. Marine, whose book Target Iran came out in hardcover last January and is now just now coming out in paperback. So it's good to have you back on the show, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
What's your reaction, before we get to what the president had to say today, what's your reaction to the National Intelligence Estimate as released yesterday?
Well, it pretty much matches the finding that I came to in my book, Target Iran, that there is no evidence that Iran is pursuing a nuclear weapons program, that what we have is an enrichment program that appears to be for peaceful nuclear energy, and that the case that Iran is a threat worthy of military intervention is a case built on hyped up rhetoric and not substantive fact, mirroring the kind of behavioral patterns we saw with the Bush administration in the lead up to the Iraq war. So I'm grateful that at last some common sense is being breathed into the Iranian issue, and hopefully Congress will wake up. Because you played a montage of the president's words. Clearly, this NIE hasn't resonated to the point of having the president deviate policy direction when it comes to Iran. He continues to maintain a rather aggressive posture. And remember, the underlying policy objective is regime change, and I don't see the president backing away from that. So hopefully Congress will be empowered by this estimate to assert itself via the system of governance through oversight, whether it be at the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, the House Foreign Affairs Committee, something that tells the president, time out on Iran. You don't have carte blanche to go forward here.
Yeah, you talked about how the president doesn't seem to see this as anything different. In fact, let me play you one more piece of audio from President Bush this morning on exactly that point.
Nothing's changed in this NIE that says, okay, why don't we just stop worrying about it? Quite the contrary. I think the NIA makes it clear that Iran needs to be taken seriously as a threat to peace.
I don't think there's any question that we have to take all sorts of different countries seriously in our relations with them, but I would say that one thing has changed, and that is that now that this NIE has been made public, any popular support for going to war with Iran has probably dropped to the zero level, don't you think, Scott?
I would hope so, because the American public was, again, illogically rallying around the president's words. Remember, I have been saying for some time that his words on Iran have not been backed up by fact, and that the American public needs to think twice before accepting at face value anything this administration says because of its track record on Iraq. And now the rug has been pulled out from under the feet of the president, at least when it comes to articulating Iran as a threat from nuclear weaponry, and one would hope the American public would indeed awaken. We'll see. I mean, I'm sure pollsters are feverishly trying to write up polls, and hopefully in the next couple days we'll get a reading as to what the sense of the American people is on this issue. But remember, there's a second side. There's the other side of the coin here. The president has for some time now been playing down the nuclear aspect, because while the NIE came out recently, you know, months ago, the International Atomic Energy Agency published its findings in September that said we don't have any evidence of a nuclear weapons program. So there's been a move underfoot in Washington, D.C. to shift the debate away from, you know, a nuclear-only aspect to incorporating another argument, which is Iran's status, at least a declared status by the Bush administration, as the largest state sponsor of terror in the world today. And in this day and age of the global war on terror, that still is a you know, a very powerful hook when it comes to winning over the hearts and minds of the American people to take on a threat.
In fact, the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, announced today that the national intelligence estimate as released yesterday by the U.S. government pretty much does match up with what they have found. But there's one part of this I'm curious about, Scott, and maybe you can explain it to me. It's the use of the word halted. It says that Iran halted its nuclear weapons program 4 years ago. You can't halt something unless you have it going. So explain that to me.
Well, this is where I take I said I was happy with most of the NIE. This statement that they halted a program in 2003, you know, the NIE does not explain what program they halted. It doesn't provide any evidence that such a program ever existed. They simply postulate that a program existed and that it was halted in 2003. They do so by noting that, you know, in 2003, or actually it was 2002, the Iranian enrichment program emerged from the shadows. The Iranians were caught, you know, with this enrichment program, and had to declare it and subject it to inspection. And so the working assumption is that that enrichment program was exclusively for a nuclear weapons program, and then that the pressure put on by the inspectors caused the Iranians to halt a weapons program. But, you know, this doesn't, basically, this dog doesn't hunt. There's no data that shows a nuclear weapons program ever existed. I myself would be extremely concerned about any ongoing enrichment activity in Iran if there ever had been a nuclear weapons program. I mean, this changes the tenor completely. I find it unacceptable if indeed we know such a program existed that we are comfortable with ongoing enrichment, even though we can assert that the program has been halted. I view this as, again, irresponsible rhetoric that only empowers the president. I'll reiterate what I've said all along. There is no evidence whatsoever that Iran has ever pursued a nuclear weapons program.
This is News Talk 1120 KMOX. Paul Harris talking with Scott Ritter, the former U.N. weapons inspector and U.S. Marine, who has come out with a paperback edition of his book, Target Iran, this month. And the thing that bothers me about this is that this is kind of the National Intelligence Estimate revised edition. How could we have something come out now in 2007 talking about 4 years ago when we had a report just 2 years ago that seemed to be 180 degrees from this, Scott?
Well, one has to take a look at the composition of the Bush administration 2 years ago. We had a lot of holdovers from, you know, the Iraq debacle, people who have asserted their ideological preferences into the system of intelligence. There's a lot of pressure being brought to bear on these 16 agencies that constitute the intelligence community. The vice president, the office of the vice president, empowered in April 2001 with president by, you know, executive order to, you know, be first and foremost the overseer of national security policy. The office of the vice president has been holding back on the publication of this estimate, saying it's irresponsible to go forward with these findings. They wanted to change things, and you know, finally they had to cave in to, you know, bureaucratic pressure, because again, so many of the neoconservative diehards have left the Bush administration. There's not too many people willing to carry the water, so to speak. So the estimate was published, but you're right to point out that it's somewhat absurd to be looking at an estimate that evaluates the process for 4 years when 2 years ago we had an estimate published that came to a completely different conclusion. It just underscores the reality and the danger of the politicization of intelligence.
Do you think Bob Gates as defense secretary and Michael Mullen as the chairman of the Joint Chiefs have any influence on that?
I definitely believe that Gates and Admiral Mullen do. I mean, remember, the Defense Intelligence Agency is one of the 16 agencies that participate in the major agency, and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs also weighs in. And so this is reflective of the fact that more moderates have arisen to power within the Bush administration. But we can't forget one thing, and that is the unprecedented level of power that the office of the vice president continues to retain when it comes to issues such as Iran policy, and that until the office of the vice president is brought to heel by Congress, things like this national intelligence estimate simply don't matter. The vice president will not heed this estimate, and he continues to be the president's number one advisor on the issue of Iran.
Iran was dangerous. Iran is dangerous, and Iran will be dangerous if they have the knowledge necessary to make a nuclear weapon.
President Bush this morning at his press conference at the White House in reaction to the National Intelligence Estimate, which came out yesterday, and says that Tehran has halted or had halted its development of nuclear weapons 4 years ago, back in 2003, largely because of international scrutiny and pressure. That's in stark contrast to the NIE of just 2 years ago, when the U.S. intelligence agencies believed that Iran was determined to develop a nuclear weapons capability and was continuing its weapons development program. We're talking about this with Scott Ritter, the former U.N. weapons inspector, who, by the way, was right on every single point about Iraq that he made on this show, and has been right now on every point he's made about Iran, which he wrote about in his book called Target Iran, which is just out in paperback. And Scott, before we get back to another question from me, I want to bring in a listener by the name of Rich, who wants to jump in here, 314-436-7900 and toll-free 800-925-1120. Hi, Rich.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Great guest. I'm going to go buy the paperback this week. Again, I want to make a point. I have a nephew who's sitting in a task force on a missile cruise ship of an aircraft task group off the coast of Iran. You know, this is not talked about. They're going to rotate at Christmas and another one. They sit out there in 6 months. You know, Darth Vader, the vice president, and, of course, the president, has been talking fear. And all they do is talk about fear. And this task force, this is a trigger that we could put off if this man decides to let off the trigger. I'd like to have Scott's comment.
No, I mean, our military is deployed around the world, and they do a fantastic job in, protecting the American people from, from real threats, either threats that directly manifest themselves today or potential threats. But, you know, the whole thing about the military is they're not the Roman Legion. I was a 12-year veteran in the Marine Corps, and I'm very proud of my service, but my oath was to the Constitution, not to carry out the unilateral will and dictate of the president. And we have to understand that our military today has been used by the president and others for ideological purposes. The policies we're pursuing in the Middle East aren't policies designed to secure America's future, but policies rather designed to secure America's presence in the Middle East. As an American, I have to ask, is that truly the appropriate role and responsibility of not only my country, but the military that's ostensibly defending me? At what point in time do they stop becoming defenders of America and start becoming oppressors of the world? And that's just not an appropriate role for the military. I wish more Americans would wake up to, you know, the difficult position our military is placed in when called upon to serve a president who embarks on these ideologically driven policy objectives. Remember, our underlying policy in Iran has not changed. It continues to be regime change. The president may be stumbling and trying to make a case for military intervention based on a nuclear weapons program, but he continues to articulate Iran as a threat, not only from a nuclear program, as you just played, but also in terms of its status as a state sponsor of terror. And we have troops like this, the sailor of this, the gentleman who just called in, who are in harm's way, and not necessarily harm's way being a threat derived from Iran, but harm's way in that our president may ask them to engage in preemptive military action that's totally unnecessary for the common defense of the American people.
Scott, do you believe that Iran is any kind of threat to Americans, either in that part of the world or here at home?
Well, definitely here at home, absolutely not. Iran poses no threat to the American people whatsoever here in the continental United States, in American territory. The United States, I believe in that Newton's second law of physics applies to foreign policy as well. You know, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. However inconvenient it may be to the American people and policymakers, Iran is in the Middle East. There's 76 million Iranians. They have a lot of oil, and they're there. They're a reality. They share a long common border with Iraq. They fought an eight-year war with Saddam Hussein. Nearly a million Iranians died, and they have a vested interest in making sure that whatever government emerges in post-Saddam Iraq, it's a government that isn't dedicated to resuming that conflict. And so I do believe that, you know, when the United States imposes its will through military occupation on Iraq, that there's going to be a level of conflict between the United States and Iran. And it's real. It's there. Nobody can deny that there's friction between our two nations that sometimes manifests itself in violence. Now, to sit there and say that because the United States and Iran are loggerheads in Iraq, that this is justification for wars is just plain wrong. You know, we had to travel thousands of miles to get in trouble in Iraq, whereas Iraq and Iran share a common border. I think we need to be responsible in evaluating what Iran is up to in Iraq and elsewhere in the Middle East, and then, you know, with responsible analysis, decide whether or not it constitutes a threat to the national security of the United States. I think a lot of the threats that we face are threats of our own making. We create these problems. I'm not giving the Iranians a clean bill of health. I'm concerned about, you know, their government. I'm concerned about some of their rhetoric. But I will note that Iran hasn't invaded a nation in 300 years. And, you know, so we can't speak of the tendency of Iran to behave irresponsibly in that regard.
But if they are the ones who have been providing supplies to some of the insurgents in Iraq, and there are actually reports over the last couple of months that they have cut down on supplying the materials to make IEDs, etc. But even if they have been involved in that and in their backing of Hezbollah and other groups in the Middle East, isn't there a problem there that, if not ours alone to deal with, certainly one that the international community has to deal with? And isn't it the scrutiny and pressure of the international community that has brought this pressure to back off a little bit in Iran?
Look, there again, I need to reiterate, I'm not saying Iran doesn't pose a concern. And there is evidence of activity on the part of Iran that is construed and is irresponsible, not only by America, but the entire world. All I'm saying is that we have to put it in a proper perspective, and not evaluate it in isolation. Nothing occurs in a vacuum. And while we can say it's improper for Iran to behave in a certain manner, we need to respect the fact that maybe Iran's behavior is a reaction to irresponsible behavior by others. And so we just have to take a deep breath and fully evaluate what's going on and come up with, you know, responsible policies, and maybe those policies will continue to put pressure on Iran to get them to, you know, to carry out behavioral modification. But I don't believe we should be speaking about Iran as an inherent threat to the United States of America. I've been to Iran. In fact, I'm getting ready to head back to Iran next month, and I will tell you that this is a nation that very much wants to peacefully interact with the Western world. They're very pro-West, modern, and surprisingly pro-American. And the last thing we need to be talking about is military confrontation. I do believe their continued pressure can help, can empower the Iranian people to bring in more moderate government. But we should be looking for ways to work with the Iranians, not against the Iranians.
Scott Ritter, the former U.N. weapons inspector and United States Marine, is the author of Target Iran. We talked about it when the book first came out about a year ago, and now it is out in paperback. Just in time to have him back on to talk about the president's speech this morning in reaction to the National Intelligence Estimate, which came out yesterday, an intelligence report that finds that Iran has not been doing work on nuclear weapons for at least 4 years. They use the word halted halted the development of a nuclear bomb in the last 4 years. The NIE says that that is largely because of international scrutiny and pressure. And Scott has got his own perspective on that, but much of what is in this NIE bears out the things that he's been saying on this show about Iran for the last couple of years. Before the break, Scott, you mentioned that you're going back to Iran. Why?
Well, the important part of being able to effectively present an argument before the American public is the notion of currency. I mean, when I was a weapons inspector, I would hope that people respected my points of view because of my status as someone who had been in Iraq and had done this work firsthand. When it comes to Iran, I'm not as empowered from a resume standpoint as I was with Iraq. I've been to Iran once, but it's much more effective to talk with you and other people to say, look, I've been to Natanz, I've been to Isfahan, I've spoken to Ahmadinejad, I've spoken to Larzani, I've spoken to these other officials, and instead of just saying, look, I've read a couple articles about it, and I have my opinion of what I've read in these articles. This is firsthand research, and it also empowers other people in the delegation I'll be going with, some former ambassadors and former policy formulators who are going to go in and have the similar meetings, and we'll be able to come out as a group and better interact with the American public, with media, about what we saw in Iran, and maybe some insights into what the Iranians are thinking. That's the big unknown. What is the intent of Iran? And this is what we're going to try to discern by going to Iran.
You and I know how tough it is to see past the rhetoric of American politicians. I would guess it's even harder to see past the rhetoric of politicians in a country that we're not native to.
Absolutely, and it's a form of government. Remember, they don't just have a civil government with a parliament and a president, but they have a theocracy with a supreme leader, a guardian council, executive council, and there's a whole gray area of religious government that's frankly speaking unknown to America, and trying to navigate these waters will be a challenge indeed. But it's important to do this because by going to Iran and maybe even getting frustrated through this interaction, you become educated about the reality of the Iranian government and are in a better place to talk about it.
Listener named John emailed me and said, please ask Scott what his agenda is.
Wow. I think I took an oath to help him to defend the Constitution. My agenda is, simply put, to do just that. If somebody's threatened by the notion of an activist citizen who seeks to empower themselves for the acquisition of knowledge and information, tough luck.
The NIE, Scott, says that they concluded with high confidence that Iran halted its nuclear weapons 4 years ago in the fall of 2003, but they only have moderate confidence that Iran won't be technically capable of producing enough materials for a nuclear weapon, much less a bomb itself, until 2010 to 2015. Now, I remember when you and I talked about this first just a couple of years ago, you were using a long-range frame of reference as well on what they could do with the uranium and what they could process and what sort of time frame there was. Do you think that 2010 to 2015 range is accurate?
It all depends on what happens in terms of what decisions Iran makes. We spoke last time about some of the technical difficulties Iran is facing. I talked about the contamination of their uranium ore, the molybdenum contamination of the feedstock. They haven't resolved that issue. We also talked about some of the problems they have with the centrifuges themselves, that they can spin them up for short-term operations, inserting a small amount of gas. But all these assessments are based upon the notion of these centrifuges operating 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The Iranians haven't demonstrated that ability. Every time they try long-term operation of the centrifuges, they break. They have many, many technological hurdles that need to be crossed. And, how much effort is Iran going to put into resolving these? These all play into it. If Iran solves these problems and has the political will to see it through, yeah, to 2010-2012 timeline for meaningful industrial scale enrichment is is realistic. But, you know, if the international community could take advantage of a lull in hostile diplomacy and persuade the Iranians to back down, we may be able to shut this thing down forever, and that would be a great thing.
That would be a great thing. All right. After you come back from your trip to Iran, I'd love to talk to you again and see what your perspective is then.
It would be my pleasure.
Thank you so much. Have a nice holiday and a happy new year. Scott Ritter, the book is called Target Iran. It's out now in paperback. I'm always happy to have him here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.